What is up, sports fans? We are in our post-holiday, almost at the new year season. I'm going to start over. Hold on. 3, 2. What's up, sports fans? Welcome to Sports Odds and Ends, our post-holiday, right before the new year episode. It's going to be a good one. I'm King Kaz. I'm joined, as I always am, by my good friend and co-host, the one, the great JVZ.
JVZ, fan of the 2-0 Sacramento Kings.
Yeah. Coming out the gates pretty hot. That's why I said this is going to be a good one. Like, yeah. we started off the basketball season already. Like we said, it was going to be crazy. There's still a lot of stuff going on, stemming from the off season. We got a little bit of news from some other stuff, like the COVID casualties, some NFL stuff, and some other things to talk about. And then we might get into our predictions in another episode pretty soon.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. So I guess to start this off, I've kind of been saving this for a couple of weeks, but I've been recently getting back into watching BattleBots, and I remember watching like the Comedy Central version as a kid, and then I think they recently rebooted it for ABC. And
for a quick rundown of those not in the know, because like we said, this is the show for the fly-by-night sports fans. What is like a really quick synopsis? I mean, I think the name gives it away, but what is like a quick synopsis of BattleBots?
Yeah, it's just robots fighting each other. There are certain rules that are, I mean, most of the robots are on wheels and they drive around a little, I guess a small little arena that they built specifically for this. And that arena has like little hazards on the ground.
Yes. Does it still have that? Yeah. So it's like a very enclosed arena. You have usually a team that have two combatant teams that have built some kind of robot with weaponry, generally remote controlled. We haven't gotten into AI yet. And they pit these two machines, and pretty much people's engineering prowess against each other, right? So it's like, can you build something that can withstand taking damage while also giving it? Or I've seen some that just are like really good at withstanding damage to the point where they can just run the other bot into a wall enough that it starts to damage itself. There's been some really interesting engineering things that I've seen over the course of this show, and just kind of really interesting, you know, like strategies and things. So it's really fun if you kind of like that, like very gladiator rough thing. And I love that the arena itself also has hazards that could come into play, could be used against you or used for you. Really interesting stuff.
Yeah, and I think now, like if you were the kind of person like me who hasn't watched in a long time, you're just kind of curious about getting back into it, I would say now is a really good time to get back into it, because it seems like they've kind of relaxed some of the restrictions on how some of these bots can get built, because it seems like there's just a much wider variety of bots now. And they actually, I think they take like 32 of them and stick them in a tournament at the end after like a small preliminary stage. And so like what's really interesting is they have some giant robots and they have some really small ones as well. And, I've seen like 6 foot tall robots suplex other 6 foot tall robots before. Oh, wow. And,
I remember when I first watched it, it was a lot of very square styled robots.
Yeah. I think they had weight classes and stuff. And,
that mostly kind of resembled a really like kind of simplistic tank design. And I think it was like in the Comedy Central time where I remember watching it. And a lot of it was either with some kind of hammer or smashing or axe type of tool, or a lot of them, had some kind of like device for flipping the other robot on off. Yeah. So like, and then that brought ingenuity of people putting wheels on both sides of their very square robot, so that even if it flipped, it was still able to move and do things and stuff like that. So a lot of ingenuity has gone into this over the years, and you've seen people come up with better and better designs and more robust designs and more compact designs, like you said, that can just do more things. And it's one of those things, right? It's a weird innovation driver, as you see people kind of get better and better and better at building these things as time goes on, and the ability to build these things becomes a lot easier and less specific to what you need to do to be able to build them.
Yeah. And yeah, I'm glad you brought up like the flipping thing, because it's now kind of part of the metagame that every bot has to have a way to right itself if it gets flipped over. Mm-hmm. But then also now we're at the point where some of the flippers are so powerful that, you know, they can flip another 100-pound bot, like, you know, 5 feet up in the air, and you know, at least this season, like, there's been cameras that have been damaged and stuff, and it's just it's incredible. Like these bots go flying, and sometimes they go flying because of their own weapons, because their own weapons hit so hard that they end up launching themselves across the ring, and it's kind of funny to see like that. You know, the double-edged sword that they're playing with.
So where have you been checking this out? Like where is the way for people to check this out?
I've been checking it out through my Fubo TV sort of pseudo cable package, but it's on Discovery Channel. Think they've launched their Discovery Plus online their online streaming service. So yeah, it kind of sucks that there's like yet another streaming service to get.
I think I've come around on the streaming service thing, because this is what this is kind of what we wanted in the a la carte style of television, right? At first I was like, oh man, this sucks, right? Because there's all these streaming services and all this stuff. But the thing about it, right, is you can look at every single streaming service there is and know what's there, right? Like, and there are ways, like trials or with YouTube, to kind of check out bits of a show to see if it's something you would want to watch, to see if it's something that you would care enough about to buy that service. So I think we're getting to a point where it feels understandable, but it still does feel like very, very, very weird and out there, because like I also did not know that this Discovery Plus was a thing.
There's all these commercials for it, and I mean, sign up and like immediately go into your settings and cancel, and so you'll get like, you know, the month of that you pay for, and then you don't have to remember to cancel. And you don't have like 10 streaming services that you're paying collectively more than you would have paid for cable for.
For me right now, I have, for myself, right, Netflix, which and in talking about for the Fly By Night sports fan, right, there's a lot of options. Hulu is probably one of the best, other than specifically doing some of the sports networks. I think that's where we need to come around, is on sport network streaming. But yeah, check out BattleBots and see if that's something that you're interested in. I think you could probably go on YouTube and watch some of the
episodes. Yeah, they have they put all the old fights that they on their official YouTube channel. They put all the old fights that they didn't air on TV on their YouTube channel. So some of those are exciting as well. But
And like we said, there's always a way to kind of see if something is going to be interesting enough to you to be able to split that bill or pay for it in a certain sense that you might want to check it out in the future. All right, moving on from there, moving on from BattleBots to just straight up college football. We are in the playoffs of the college football, kind of the coming down to the the end, we have our last four teams, which are going to be Alabama at number one, Clemson number two, Ohio State number three, and Notre Dame sitting at number four, which is a surprise to me. But that's college football for you. There's always going to be at least one team that like surprises the hell out of you. And for me, this year is Notre Dame.
Yeah. Alabama and Clemson, never really surprising anybody to see those two up there at the top too. So, just a reminder, the Alabama versus Notre Dame game, which was supposed to be the Rose Bowl game, is, I guess, still technically called the Rose Bowl game, but it's being held in Arlington, Texas. So, yeah, so that's a COVID casualty. Both these games are going to be on New Year's Day, I believe. So check that out if you want, if you're the college football type. I think a week from Monday, I think will be the national championship game. I think that's how they normally do it. Okay. So yeah, college football has kind of been ransacked by COVID, but it looks like they're managing to kind of finish out the season. But a couple other both figurative and literal casualties. We've got Keontae Johnson, men's basketball player from Florida, has been diagnosed with acute myocarditis, which is a pretty severe heart condition. He collapsed on the floor during a game recently, and so that was a very scary situation. The diagnosis is that it was myocarditis, which has kind of been linked as one of the long-term symptoms of COVID. So, which he did have earlier this year. So that's tough. Like we're seeing, you know, super healthy athletes that are seeing long-term effects from this. So it's.
But this is one of the things that we talked about at the start, right? With the scare and possibility, with the scare and possibility of COVID, were these long-term effects that were possible, right? And a lot of people tried to play these things off. And this is one of the things we talked about on the show, is what happens, you know, when someone gets it and then it causes prolonged health effects, right? Because there was a lot of talks about it affecting the lungs, affecting certain kind of muscle development, so like you said, the heart, and other parts of the body that a lot of these people rely on in their professional careers, right? We've seen how heart problems have caused issues for football and basketball players just even in a pre-COVID world. So now we're getting this sense of what that possibly could be in a post-COVID world, right? Like with these people who have tested positive and have had COVID and then think that they, once they're past that diagnosis and that quarantine time and are back to what they think is healthy, coming in with now prolonged effects that weren't in the forefront before. So things like this are scary, right? Because I don't think this is going to be a one and done case. I think we're going to start to see more of this from other people who have had from other athletes who have had COVID and now are getting back into a track of healthiness. I think we're going to see more of these prolonged effects from something like this.
Yeah, and with so many players, both in the NBA and the, you know, and in the basically all these sports that we're talking about that have tested positive and then have ended up okay, there's still kind of the lingering question in the back of your mind, like, are they actually okay, or are we going to see like 5 years from now, like one of these people just collapse on the court like this, and we're going to see that there's like heart conditions or something. I mean, obviously very low percentages, but with so many people getting COVID, the 0.001% of, you know, hundreds of thousands of people is still potentially enough noticeable people if if we're talking high profile athletes, we're bound to see at least one or so get something really serious. And that's also like and not to disrespect like all the non-athletes that have lost their lives or anything like that. It's just, for all the people that are kind of downplaying all this, we're seeing even the small percentages have an effect on some people that, that everybody recognizes. So,
well, yeah, but I don't think it's a downplay. I think it's a microcosm or a macro of something bigger, right? If you see these people who are relatively good at maintaining and taking care of their bodies in a healthy state, in a healthy manner, right? Yeah. These athletes who are taking, supplements and other things to make their bodies the best version of what it can be, coming across and not having any previous health effects, right? Coming in and now having prolonged health effects that can affect them for the rest of their lives, right? You take that in the larger picture of everything, and you think about somebody in their everyday life who may not take care of their body as well as a professional athlete does, having COVID, getting past COVID, thinking they're okay, and then, seeing that they could have prolonged health effects that aren't going to have, these high powered doctors who still can't really do much for these athletes. Like, what can you do to protect yourself? And that's why, like, a lot of these things need more research to understand better. And we need more time with these things. Like, thinking this is going to be some one and done situation, like once we're out of 2020, whoo, that's over kind of thing is the wrong way to think about it.
And I don't know, like heart stuff is always very scary for athletes because you have a job that requires intense physical activity and a job that requires putting stress on the heart. Mm-hmm. And so like anytime you have, conditions out there where so many people are getting something that could potentially cause long-term heart problems, it's scary. Like anytime an athlete discovers like some sort of underlying heart problem, it's almost a it's almost a career-ending thing, or at least it's something where they have to constantly monitor the condition of the heart and check on either the size of the heart or just the overall health of it, on a fairly, regular basis, just to even be able to continue playing a sport as a career, because it's not like, you're going out and jogging, for a couple, for 15 to 20 minutes every day. It's like you're trying to push your body to its limits, and if your heart cannot take those limits, then that can kill you, and it can not only kill you, but it can provide some very scary, it's very scary to see an athlete collapse on the field of play. There's just something different about that, so it's everybody stay safe because this is still not over, but we're the end is in sight, I think. And that's what sucks about catching this now, is while the end is in sight and to kind of blow it now is kind of a waste. The Duke women, it's a basketball team, they've actually decided that they're just going to sit out the season. Mm-hmm. And I think that this was supposed to be a pretty exciting season for them because they just hired Kara Lawson as their new coach. That's WNBA legend and also ESPN analyst Kara Lawson. So I think they were pretty excited about about their prospects coming into this season. On the men's side, Duke coach Mike Krzyzewski also criticized. He kind of raised the same question, like, why are we playing right now? This is supposed to be the most dangerous time of the year. More people are getting COVID cases than ever before, and more people are dying than ever before. And it looks like we're just going to kind of play on as if it's not a big deal. Not to beat a dead horse into the ground, but, with us being so close to getting a potential vaccine, it might be worth it for leagues that haven't started yet to consider postponing for a couple months. And just because we know that there's kind of because we know there's an end in sight, maybe we just wait until that end, and then it makes better health sense and better economic sense as well. If we can resume these sports with fans in the stands and make a little bit more money that way. Mm-hmm. So it's, these are the questions that all these leagues are struggling with. The NBA, we got all this praise for the NBA for doing the bubble and how nobody tested positive within the bubble. But we also knew, like, okay, when it came time to start their regular season again, which they started somewhat prematurely because they needed to recoup some of their losses from last year. We got 2 days into the regular season before we had to postpone a game due to COVID. That was due to the Houston Rockets, multiple separate incidences for most of them, it was just reckless behavior. Only a few of them actually have COVID, but James Harden for the second time in recent weeks has been caught partying. The first time he was outside of, because he hadn't shown up to training camp yet, even though he was supposed to be at training camp, and just, was blatantly flaunting the fact that he wasn't going and showing up late and out partying at strip clubs. The fact that he hadn't shown up to camp yet meant he hadn't entered the protocol, so he didn't get in trouble for that. But now, since he's been at camp, and then he was also spotted at a gathering again afterwards, that caused a bit of a kerfuffle. I think he's been fined for that, he's been fined. I don't know. The NBA was very lenient on this fine, and they tried to act like this was the first offense, even though it very clearly was the second time that he did this in a couple of weeks. But it's weird how everybody's just ignoring the first time because he was being defiant and wasn't showing up to camp on time that first time. It's almost like twice here the Rockets have kind of gotten away with the fact that they were flaunting, that they were breaking the rules so badly that they technically didn't break them that bad. It's weird to say that, but like, because this game got postponed, they didn't get punished for not having James Harden because so many of their players broke the rules. Because John Wall and DeMarcus Cousins and Kenyon Martin Jr. went and got a haircut together, and they happened to do that at around the same time James Harden did his thing. And because Ben McLemore and Jayshon Tate are also on the shelf, they didn't have enough players to play this game, and so the NBA decided to postpone the game. But if had just one of these people done wrong, then they would have had to play without them. They would have had to play this game without James Harden, but instead they get kind of a reprieve because they all fucked up at the same time. And yeah. I don't know, it's weird. It's it's sad that we couldn't get past 2 days into the season, like two literal days into the season.
Like, funny enough, DJM just sends across the desk, you know, the James Harden story arc continues. And then, weirdly enough, right, they go into this game and James Harden balls out, you know, like... When stuff like that happens, it makes it even like weirder, right? Because there is all this stuff, and you kind of want to see him come out and not play that well with all the shit that's going on, but he does, and you're like, does any of that matter? Like, you know?
Yeah, it's like everybody who can trade for him still wants to trade for him. It's like he can do all this stuff and he's not going to damage his value that much. He's still going to get a max contract. Just the fact that there is a max contract. There's a lot worse players that get max contracts than James Harden, who is a perennial MVP candidate. It's almost one of those cases where like he can go full scorched earth on his reputation and it's not going to matter because he's that good of a player that any team is going to take a chance on him. He can act like a total dumbass and nobody's going to care. He actually has previously caught COVID. So I think maybe that's why he's being a little reckless, because he thinks he's, you know, immune now, but
yeah. And that's not a thing.
We don't know how long people are protected from reinfection, and that's different for everybody. So,
but I think in the last few years, we figured out just how savvy NBA players are on medical science.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And at the very least, we've figured out from this incident just how savvy James Harden is on trying to burn bridges on the way out of town. Who knows whether it's going to actually work, but it seems like he's trying. And
everybody's reaching into that Jimmy Butler playbook.
Except, yeah, I mean, yeah, Jimmy Butler did ball out wherever he went, and James Harden's doing that too. It's yeah, I think honestly. I'm trying to find ways that those two situations are a little bit different. And the only difference to me is I hate watching the way James Harden play. And, like, I can't find any other way to distinguish the two. And just like Jimmy Butler has been, because he's had recent success and helped drag the Miami Heat to the finals. It's like, you know, everybody's accepted that, oh, Jimmy's being Jimmy, or everybody's looking at the positive sides of the way Jimmy Butler is behaving. And at least it seems like with Jimmy Butler, like his issues were on court issues, and they were centered around him being maybe a little bit too motivated, trying to drag his teammates along, whereas James Harden is just at this point he's just using every dirty tactic possible to try to burn bridges with his team and get traded.
All right, what's going on from there?
Yeah, we've got the NFL playoffs.
So we're getting into the NFL playoffs. I'm not excited about any of this.
Talk about it anyway. It's a sports show.
It is.
Yeah.
I joke.
It's hard to. I guess all of our teams are out of the playoffs. So
look,
and our fantasy teams are out as well. So.
I make that joke. But we all came into the season knowing none of our teams were going to the playoffs.
That's not true. That's
okay. Me and DJM came into this season knowing that our teams weren't going to the playoffs.
I mean, I thought there was a chance because for some reason there's always this curse that afflicts Super Bowl runner-ups.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the injury bug hit the Niners.
we'll get there.
yeah, the injury bug there. DJM says he got what he wanted with Matt Patricia getting fired. It kind of took them a while.
You know what I love? Not to hard derail us before we get into the playoff berth, is TJM had a really great tweet about the amount of coaches they've gone through and the amount of quarterbacks they've gone. And this is something he's talked about persistently on the show, the amount of coaching and quarterbacking that the Lions have gone through, and just even in some of their positional staff or whatever. Because I think it's what the third coach where you're on.
Yeah.
The Lions?
Yeah. So yeah, speaking of COVID casualties,
the most recent game where the Lions lost to the Tampa Bay Bucks 47-7, it had gotten to the point where the team had to deal with some COVID contact tracing issues, which included interim head coach Daryl Bevel and a good portion of the Lions' defensive coaching staff. And it ended up with their wide receiver coach, Robert Prince, being the de facto head coach for that game. And he has been technically their third head coach this season. So make of that what you will. It's the Lions. The tweet that I had mentioned was, this is not unlike in the late 80s or early 90s when the Lions had a rotation, yes, a rotation, of three starting quarterbacks at any given time. And now in 2020, they're on their third head coach in a season. One they fired, one the interim that had COVID issues, and now their wide receiver coach who had to step in. And they got destroyed.
Yeah, that's... well, at least... I mean, you did get what you wanted. The worst coach, the one you definitely knew was not going to contribute to the future, is now gone. And so we'll have to wait and see on the new hires for next year and whether that provides anything positive for the team moving forward.
Worst franchise in sports. One playoff win in six decades.
Ouch. Ouch.
It's pretty bad.
Yeah. So, at least as far as the playoff spots now, the Chiefs, Bills, and Steelers have clinched spots in the AFC. The Packers, Saints, Seahawks, and Buccaneers have clinched spots in the NFC. Just speaking of bad franchises that are kind of ending playoff droughts, the Browns are pretty close to clinching in the AFC. There's only eight teams in it right now in the AFC. Yeah. So the Ravens might sneak their way in these last couple games, but for now they're on the outside looking in. The Miami Dolphins have positioned themselves at the very last playoff spot. Remember, we've got seven playoff or four division winners and three wild card spots this year for each conference, so just a little bit bigger than last year previous years.
So until you had this written out in our show notes, I was like, it's not that bad, but now that I look at it, it seems like a lot, man. It seems like a lot.
A lot of teams or a lot?
Yeah,
of,
yeah. It just seems like too many.
I mean, there's only one more than previous years, so
I know, but I don't know. I feel like it might not be that bad, but on paper it just looks like a lot. Yeah.
And so part of the issue is and this is exhibited very clearly this year with the Washington football team getting or being in pole position for the divisional playoff spot at 6-8 right now. If the rest of the NFC East loses out, like, we could end up with a team with six wins making the playoffs, and that's a worse record than I think that would be the worst team to ever make the playoffs record wise. So
that should not happen. Like, that just should be a
thing. Yeah, and I think fundamentally, I think in all sports, people kind of have a problem with any team that loses more games than they win should not be in the postseason. And the problem with the NFL is that sometimes that team wins the division. So not only do they get into the playoffs, they get a home playoff game, and which I guess this year doesn't really matter that much. It'll matter because they don't have to travel, but like fan-wise, it's not as big a deal. You get a home playoff game and you get in over a team that that had a better record, not only a better record but a pretty strong winning record. So right now, like, the Bears are the bubble team. They're the number 8 seed looking in, whereas a team that has won one fewer game than them right now is going to take a playoff spot, and maybe the Bears might miss out, just because, you know, like right now, every NFC East team is actually still technically in the playoff race. And, you know, and the Washington football team with 6 wins is leading all of them, while all these other teams in the NFC that are in the playoffs have like 9 wins or so. I think they wanted to add that one extra wild card team just to make it so there is less of a chance that a team with a very strong record would be on the outside looking in. It's the problem is worse this year than it has ever been. But I don't know. I think they also want to emphasize winning your division as well. So,
yeah, I don't know. There's a lot of teams in here I'm excited to see in here, right? The Bills, I'm excited to see the Bills, like, making it this far, right? We talk about teams that haven't made it in a while, doing really good things, building up that team. I want to see the Browns make this turnaround that they've been making, that we've been hoping that they would continue to make. That's great. The Dolphins doing what they set out to do, right? Going from the worst team to the best, to one of the best. Obviously the Chiefs and the Seahawks are teams that are kind of soft on me, right? I love both of their quarterbacks, so I want to see them continue to win and do good things. But then you have like the Titans and the entire NFC.
You're not on the Derrick Henry train, like,
no.
No.
And then like the Rams and the Cardinals just seems so random in here, right? Like, have they been doing okay this season? Yeah, like, but I don't know. I think that's what it is. It's just because we're in this position where a lot of people still have a lot of opportunity to get a playoff berth, that it seems like a lot. I think once we're finally into the playoffs and things are a little bit more locked in, it won't seem as daunting. It won't seem as much, but right now it just seems like a lot. Like, it just seems like it seems like one of those situations in European soccer where everybody has that possibility, depending on who wins and who loses, or if this guy wins and then this other guy, you know what I mean? Like, it seems like one of those situations.
The last day of the group stage of the World Cup.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that's part of that's part of the magic of the NFL is that it's just slightly unfair, and but so because of that, anything can kind of happen that last week, and so it's a short season and it's a very small sample size. If you actually wanted it super fair, you know. Play 32 games and have a super long season, and by the end of that 32 games you'll know who the best teams are, but you know, or in the playoffs, you know, play best of 3 every round, you know, like the NBA does. They hammer their product into the ground, and you know by the end of the NBA finals that this team beat every other team 4 times, so the NFL, it's just one game and that's it. And so there's a little bit on unpredictability there, which provides a little bit of magic. Otherwise, you know, the last 20 years or so, the Patriots would have won out, and that would have been really boring. So, yeah. By the way, this is the first year that the Patriots have not made the playoffs, I think, in a long time. I think since the Matt Castle season when Tom Brady got injured. But yeah, I kind of get what you mean with like some of these teams being a little mediocre. Like with as much shit as everybody talks about the Bears, it's kind of weird that they're still in it. Mm-hmm. The Cardinals I'm okay with just because Kyler Murray is exciting, but like the Rams I feel like have been pretty underwhelming. Mm-hmm. So I'm surprised to see them in there, not only in there but also ahead of the Cardinals. I think there's something a little bit funky about all these NFC West teams, and their records might be a little bit inflated, specifically because they're playing. Like this year, the NFC West was scheduled to play the NFC East. So, I'm good, DJM. This is not like being salty about the 49ers. Just that the Niners got injured. So that's it. I don't expect them to overcome that. And they got a quarterback issue they got to deal with. But other than that, I'm okay with waiting for next year on this team. We had enough success recently to carry some of the momentum a little bit going forward. Otherwise, the rest of these NFC West teams are a little bit. I don't know if I believe in them just because they had to play the NFC East so many times. You can only do so much when you're playing against the Giants and the Cowboys and the Eagles. But also to continue our NFC East talk, the Washington football team. Just can't stay away we forgot to mention the term NFC least in conjunction with the NFC East. I feel like we got to get that in there every week because it really is kind of a marvel at how bad this division is. The Washington football team is still dodging scandal after scandal. This time, Dwayne Haskins, who came into the season as their starting quarterback, then got demoted all the way to their third quarterback, and now is kind of spelling the injured Alex Smith. Or he got to start in place of the injured Alex Smith last week, lost a game to the Seahawks, and then went out partying, which... Nobody likes it when you get spotted partying after a loss, like immediately after a loss, even in the before times. But now during COVID times, that's an even worse offense. So that violated protocol, and he got fined $40,000 for that, and got stripped of his captaincy by the rest of the team. But since Alex Smith is injured, I think he's at least the presumptive starter for this week. It confirmed that he will be starting today. Okay. So yeah, I think this is a situation where this is a young quarterback that has had a lot of maturity problems. This isn't the first time, And you know, you can look up the list of the various issues that he's had coming into this year. I think we might be in the situation soon where the Washington football team might give up on him as a potential quarterback of the future. Getting real Jamarcus Russell vibes here. it's
weird, right? Because this has happened throughout the kind of the history of most major sports, right? You get these guys who have all this skill and all this potential, and it's they can't get out of their own way.
I should also say Ryan Leaf vibes, Johnny Manziel vibes.
Yeah, like Johnny Manziel is probably the biggest one, right, to me in the most recent years. Like Jamarcus Russell is pretty up there on people who can't get out of their own way. But I think Johnny Manziel is the poster child of can't get out of your own fucking way. And constantly being the person who builds the hurdles that you have to leap over. I think I would make Johnny Manziel the poster child for that.
I mean, Jamarcus Russell and Ryan Leaf are kind of
They're
up there specifically because they were drafted so high. They were drafted number one overall and number two overall, and on top of that, they got drafted, or at least Jamarcus Russell got drafted in an era where there was no rookie salary scale. So mm-hmm. Jamarcus Russell got paid a shit ton of money to be god awful for 4 years, and I think he was maybe one of the last quarterbacks that was able to make out like bandits. Actually, Alex Smith was one of those as well, but he actually managed to turn his career around. And nobody ever doubted Alex Smith's work ethic and. Whereas with some of the guys like Russell and Manziel, that always been a problem. So, it seems like Dwayne Haskins, you get mixed reports about his work ethic. You see the coaches coming out and saying like, oh, like he's working really hard, but then he'll do something really dumb every couple weeks. And, it'll make you question whether he has the right, he has the right maturity level to play a position where you have to have a lot of poise. Where you have to be fairly mentally sound, or at least you got to have your shit together to be a quarterback in the NFL. And it seems like Dwayne Haskins doesn't quite have his shit together, at least as far as not making bad decisions off the field. But then again, maybe that's just the culture all the way down from the top, because Dan Snyder is feuding with one of his minority owners right now. Snyder is claiming that he's being extorted after reports of a 2009 sexual misconduct settlement between Snyder personally and a female employee of the team. That's not to get this confused with the other sexual harassment scandals that have been a part of this Washington football team. So this is something separate from that. Those other scandals, Snyder has denied any involvement in those. And so now this is something that does involve him and was previously unknown until it came to light. So, mm-hmm. With all the good story, I mean, there's this team has a playoff spot right now. They are leading the division as bad as they are, without all the other bullshit surrounding the team. Without the self-inflicted wounds, maybe you could have spun they finally changed the team name. That's a good thing. It's a step in the right direction. The Alex Smith is a fantastic story this year. He's a lock in for comeback player of the year. Chase Young, the rookie they drafted last year, is looking tremendous on the defensive side of the ball. And this team has quite a lot of good to look forward to if you look closely enough, but they just keep doing bad things to cloud all that up. And at a time where the fan base should be excited that this is a playoff team, So I think their first chance at making the playoffs since Kirk Cousins left. So I think it's a shame that they keep doing this to themselves. That's one NFC East team. The Cowboys, we've talked about their issues. I think it's mostly down to Dak Prescott being out. The Giants, I think, are mostly we've talked about that as well, so we won't make Kaz relive all that. The Eagles, I think, I don't think anybody was expecting them to be this bad, and I don't think people were expecting Carson Wentz to be this bad.
No,
so this is a very puzzling situation.
I don't think it was expected, but it's one of those things, right? They were a very pieced together team. A lot of the things they had were little parts and pieces that they kind of fell into.
Leftovers from their Super Bowl team.
Yeah.
From a couple years ago.
I don't know. It's kind of a weird hard spot for like with the Philadelphia Eagles. It's hard to really predict what exactly went wrong for them, right? Almost anything you say would sound nitpicky, you know. Like I think at the end of it, they just kind of had a bad season because of all the like shit going on.
It's like their quarterback has the yips. Like I think Carson Wentz has the yips. That's all it really is. Like you can't really explain any of this because this is a guy who, like, you know, during that Super Bowl year, he was an MVP candidate. Had he not gotten injured at the end, I think he might have won it. So he had this tremendous year, and then we got to watch his backup lead this team to a Super Bowl and defeat the New England Patriots. And now Nick Foles is a legend forever in Philadelphia Eagles lore,
guys,
even though he's not even with the team anymore. And yeah,
I have a question about Carson Wentz and the whole situation. And this is going to sound a little hot takey. He had that one really good season where Nick Foles ended up taking over for him. But one, what has Carson Wentz been since then? And number two, why did the Philadelphia Eagles draft Jalen Hurts in the second round? You don't draft a quarterback in the first two rounds of the draft if you don't assume they'll be starting eventually.
Yeah.
And I mean,
so when that happened, I think we came on the show and said that was a little bit weird, but we also tried to make excuses and said that was different than the Green Bay Packers situation with them drafting Jordan Love early on, because I think the terminology we used was the Eagles always like having two good quarterbacks, and they recognize the value in having a good backup quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
Specifically, partly because their backup quarterback led them to a Super Bowl win. So I think everybody kind of gives them a pass for that. It also helps in a situation like this where your starter has the yips, and so now you've got a guy that's ready to step in.
I think it's also a situation at using your own knowledge and your own history to your benefit to a certain degree, right? You know Carson Wentz has these moments of where he kind of falls apart a little bit, right?
Sometimes physically, like he gets injured a lot.
At the same time, there are people who like to do it in, like, we still live in this era where, like, there are people who need a chip on their shoulder, right? Who need something to make them play up to the best of their ability, right? And maybe for the Eagles coaching staff, Carson Wentz is one of those people where it's like, maybe if his job isn't on the line, he doesn't play as well. But maybe constantly putting his job on the line also makes him fucking play bad, you know? Like,
well, Kaz, if he ends up not playing well because his job might be on the line, but he also needs to have a chip on his shoulder with his job on the line, how good is Carson Wentz to begin with? Because right. That's the thing, yeah. I'm starting to think now. Because yep. If it wasn't Nick Foles, if it wasn't his injuries, if it wasn't Jalen Hurts, maybe it's just Carson Wentz isn't that great. Mm-hmm. And keep in mind, the Eagles, they locked him up with a big contract, too.
Yeah. Which is now basically untradeable. But then again, no contract is truly untradeable. But they're not going to get good value for him if they try to trade him. But I'm kind of scared the 49ers might trade for him. But it's...
Yeah, but we've also seen people... Easy. And you know, like, I don't easy. Know. I'm giving them too much credit. Like, we've seen easy. People go to different situations.
Yep.
I'm going to break the show for a second.
All right.
I'm sure I've brought this up with you once before. Matthew Stafford and a first-round pick to the Niners. What do you say?
Oh, and a first-round pick?
Well, sorry.
I think I've told you before, like, I would actually be cool with Stafford coming to the Niners. And I don't think I'm the first person to... Or I might have been the first person to say it in like my circles, but I've heard other people mention that since then.
Matthew Stafford to the Niners for a first round pick.
Oh, no, not for a first round pick, but I wouldn't mind.
Okay.
Signing
All right.
And that's only like, it's only a negotiation thing. Like
yeah.
If the 49ers did it, I wouldn't be that upset about it. But I do value.
I mean,
value draft picks. So
I wish we had a better sense of some of the kids coming out of college. To be like,
because
you know there are just years where those picks have no value anyway, right? Like,
well, I can say I certainly do because
and
Lions.
I don't know, I've gotten into these discussions when it comes to talking about tanking in the NFL, which to me seems kind of useless, because. Yeah, you know, like we talk about all this stuff about like tanking for Trevor Lawrence and you know, last year it was tank for Tua, but like the Dolphins didn't actually have to tank that far to get Tua. Like they got him with the fifth pick, so there isn't really that much of an incentive to be as bad as fucking possible. Like, you know, maybe the Jets when they won last week, you know, took themselves out of the Trevor Lawrence sweepstakes, but there's other quarterbacks out there too. And there's no guarantee that Trevor Lawrence is going to be the best one. And so I think it's more important to build out a good front office that is capable of landing. You get seven draft picks and you know, you expect the first three of them to be contributors eventually, to be starters in the league. And you know, you don't have to have the ultimate game changer, because the ultimate game changer can only have so much an effect on the game when there's 11 people on your team on the field at a time. It's not like the NBA. So it's, you know, we see these teams that are racing to the bottom, and you know, while a good draft pick can help spark a team, you know, like the Niners got Nick Bosa a couple years ago at number two. And that propelled, or that was last year, and that propelled them to the Super Bowl. But they also had a pretty good team to begin with. The only reason they were at number two is because they got hit with injuries. Mm-hmm. And they're kind of doing the same thing again this year. But it's, you know, teams that are that bad that they actually need
to. So, VZ, what you're saying is that the Lions just being bad is just as good as a team we're tanking.
I'm saying the Lions just being the Lions would not get any benefit from trying to be any worse than they are, from intentionally trying to be any worse than they are.
I wish more Lions fans would understand that.
Yeah, it's like after the first round is over, let me put it this way. There are only 32 players that get picked. 31 players that get picked where you can say that, or let me rephrase that. At most, there are 31 players that are out of reach for a team in the draft. Everybody else is up for grabs if you want to draft them early enough. the, you know, and that's if you have the last pick in the first round. The other 31 players drafted ahead of you are out of reach. Everything else is up to scouting. And if you think a player is good enough, then you take them. And if your talent evaluation is good enough, then you take your guys when you need your guys, or when those guys are available to take in the draft. And you don't necessarily worry about when other people are going to try to take them. So that's, you know, 6/7 of the draft that is available to draft at any time. You can draft these guys in the first round if you want. You can draft a kicker in the first round if that's what your team needs. And that's what the Raiders did. And they got a kicker that stayed on their team for over 10 years and solved a serious problem on their team. You can shoot for the moon to try to get a quarterback and you end up with Jamarcus Russell or Dwayne Haskins or Johnny Manziel, and then that'll set your franchise back a couple years. It is really important to hit on these picks. So just being able to evaluate talent and get contributors at, you know, no matter where you pick in the draft is important. It's more important than whether you're drafting with the fifth pick or the third pick. Like we said, last year it was tank for Tua, and they ended up with Tua anyways, even though they fell all the way to the fifth pick in the draft. And I don't think Miami Dolphins fans wish at this point that they had lost more games than they did last year. So trying to race to the bottom, I think, is a losing proposition long term. All right. But either way, Carson Wentz has been benched. Maybe you get your guy and that guy is Carson Wentz and he balls out and has an MVP level year and then never does anything again after that. So I don't know. It's a crapshoot. I shouldn't say it's a crapshoot. Everything I just said is kind of the opposite. You can make it a lot less of a crapshoot if you're smart enough.
Before we go though, before we move on to the last thing, I was just thinking about this as we were talking about it, right? I think the ideal version of that situation is what is happening in Miami right now, right?
Yes.
Because like we said, we talked about having Tua as that guy, but you still have Ryan Fitzpatrick, who is still somehow, some way at 30 plus years old, playing out of his mind in most of the games. And then when he isn't, they give the other guy, or when they're ahead enough, they give the other guy enough starts. And you have Ryan Fitzpatrick, who is okay with the sense that he is coming to the end of his career, to let that guy have those starts, to teach that guy help him get more advanced in the NFL career so that it is that passing stone, right? That's the ideal situation that you're generally tending to look for in these kind of situations. So can it work? Yes. But is it a flash in a pan sometimes? Yes.
I saw a tweet yesterday and I'm going to bungle it and I forgot who said it, but somebody said there's two types of backup quarterbacks in the league. There's like the backstabbers and the therapists, and Ryan Fitzpatrick is going to have a long career. Like he's like the Josh McCown type that this guy was, I shouldn't say that good because, you know, the Fitz magic nickname exists for a reason, but like Ryan Fitzpatrick is going to have a long career being a backup quarterback because he's always ready to contribute, and whatever he does, he pulls out magic, but he's maybe just not quite there at starter level, but he's always there. He's always ready. And when he's not playing, he's always super supportive of the quarterback that's starting ahead of him. So yeah, it's magic. Fitz magic. All right. So DJM just posted the Ryan Fitzpatrick cycle of getting released, get signed as a backup, get hurt, or star gets hurt. Fitzpatrick plays super well. He does magic, earns a starting spot, gets paid, and then sucks again. And then, and there's a cycle, but he keeps doing that cycle, and he's been able to do that cycle since the time he was drafted to now. He's 38 years old and still going.
Yeah.
Good for Ryan Fitzpatrick. He's found his niche, even if that it's the same niche with many different teams.
So speaking of finding your niche, which I think is a good transition, let's talk about NHL hemorrhaging money. So with all the things going on in COVID, we've been constantly talking about the money proposition for a lot of sports, right? And not having people in the stands, not having concessions, not having all these things that you would so normally fund your team and do all these kind of things, whatever the money goes to. So it's a big money loss for a lot of sports. Some sports are hit harder than others. I think the NFL and the NBA are kind of at the top of doing well without fans in the stands, because they print so much money in other factors of what their sports are. Yeah, baseball is in the middle. They have other avenues of revenue, but it's just hard. But at the same time, we're never really sure how much money baseball is hemorrhaging because they keep their books pretty close to the chest.
They always act like they're poor. Yeah.
Yeah. But hockey, on the other hand, is one of these sports that lives in being live, yeah. Right? It lives and breathes on its fandom and people watching the sport and people participating and coming to events, going to games, spending money on games and things like that, because they have been struggling even before COVID. We've talked about the NHL money struggles of TV deals and things like that. And this is a constant back and forth between the Players Association and the NFL. I mean, and the NHL about money. Money is a big factor for the hockey league, to the point that they have to figure out how to make up for the lost revenue. And one of the ideas that they are currently throwing around is something we've talked about coming into other sports. We've seen a little bit of it in basketball in recent years with small advertisements on jerseys. And now the NHL is going down that avenue. They're not necessarily on jerseys, but they're looking at the avenue of putting advertisements for companies on helmets. And this is kind of going on in a lot of different directions, right? Because of the fact that they are looking to get upwards of $15 million, which I think is an astronomical amount of money.
Total for all the teams, I think.
Yeah. So like full ad placements. Like this is a across the board, not per ad. This is in total what they would want to make from the proposition of having players have advertisements on their helmets. In the sense of losing revenue from not having people in the stands. And this article by TSN puts a lot of these arguments in pretty good light and understanding with a couple of tweets from Wick Westhead. And one of them even, which is like, one of the things I like is what Westhead said in, the teams are kind of like considering this some gold mine, when in actuality, a lot of what's going to happen is good faith deals. And there's not going to be the money exchange that there should be, because you're going to make deals on the sense of like, hey, like, let's see if it works for you. And then let's talk money. So you're going to end up with a lot of these ads happening in good faith rather than in contracts. Which then, it doesn't get them anywhere.
Yeah, it's, we don't know whether this is going to be a long-term thing, although I think it's a pretty safe bet that once somebody finds a revenue stream, they're never going to actually give it up. In fact, you know, it's, we can expect that, like, they'll start with small ads and then they'll eventually find ways to get bigger. And the worry is that eventually one day they'll look like a NASCAR car where there's just ads everywhere.
Yeah. And people always talk about that. People always talk about these senses of being like teams being covered in advertisements. And I think we live in a realm in the goddamn year 2020 where we have people who are good designers and good integrators of design that I think we could make it work with across more sports, not even just hockey, where we could put more ads on jerseys if it is a good possible revenue stream, and it wouldn't look terrible, right? You're not going to have guys out here looking like weird ass NASCARs. Like, I think it would be integrated to a sense where it doesn't really distract from anything.
So I think soccer is kind of the worst end of the spectrum, where the jersey sponsor is like the largest thing on the jersey. It's larger than the club badge. It's or like significantly larger than the club badge. It is to the point where where you almost think that it's like Team Chevrolet playing Team Fly Emirates out there. Mm-hmm. Those are really lucrative sponsorships for the team. But also, soccer has kind of a built-in excuse because they don't show commercials during the half of play. So you got to play a continuous 45 minutes. So they got to make up that revenue some other way.
And you say that, but I agree. I very much agree. But then I look at some of those soccer jerseys, and I love some of them, right? Some of them just are fine to me. Like Arsenal is the one that has Emirates on their jerseys, and I'm looking at a bunch of their jersey designs, and like, these look fine. I'd take that on a fucking Knicks jersey.
They can look okay. The only issue is that like, you think that's the name of the team if you're
yeah, but I think that's if you're not in the know, right? Like I think that is kind of the fly by night sports fan sense of it. Yeah. I think if you're enough in the know, it can work out fine. But I do see what you're saying. Like kind of coming to it all of a sudden with what you're used to being the big prominent thing is the name of the team. Coming into it and seeing the name of an advertiser as the most prominent thing on your jersey comes across weird, right? Like rather than looking at the Sacramento Kings and it having the Kings logo front and center, the Kings logo is a little badge up in the corner, and then it just says Guinness across the chest, you know, like.
You know, now we're at the stage where like arenas are named. You know, sometimes they'll name the court separately from the arena. They'll name the we're at the point where like any place where there can be a sponsor, they're gonna put a sponsor. The only places where we kind of avoid it are the like when there's like a really long tradition of. You know, like this, the name of the stadium is named after a team legend or something. Then they're not gonna, you know, they're not gonna rename Lambeau Field, with you know, the name of some cheese company. it's like they might do cheese company at Lambeau Field and incorporate all that into the name. But I don't know, people might think that's a little bit tacky, but like all of this is like different degrees of tackiness that we've just kind of learned to accept. Mm-hmm. Just with the expectation that like I guess we're kind of okay with teams grabbing for money now that every team is struggling for money, but like in a couple of years when things hopefully get back to normal, I wonder how okay with it we're going to be. Then again, I look at the NBA jersey badges. And they're not that bad. Like,
no,
they've done the opposite. Like, they keep the name on the front still is the team name, and it's still very large. And and then you just get like the small jersey sponsor, and those are starting to get pretty lucrative. I think one thing we forgot to mention with the Giannis Antetokounmpo Supermax renewal story is that since he signed that deal, the Bucks are actually getting a lot more offers for their jersey sponsorship now that they know that, you know, one of the most marketable players in the league is going to be there with the team long term. You know, that has benefits there if you know that you can strike long-term deals. What you're saying about the NHL helmet sponsorships, where like these are kind of just like a try and see how it works thing, that's a little bit less encouraging, because maybe if some business out there knows that they can get their name on, you know, the Washington Capitals helmet for the next 5 years, then it can be, then they might be willing to pay a little bit more money for that.
I also think it comes down to, right, because I think we talked about two sports in soccer and basketball and the NBA who are kind of at the height of kit design, right? I think like, basketball.
Although the NBA is going a little bit over the top with that. With it seems like every team has 7 different jerseys now, and I'm not okay with that.
See, you say that, right? But then when you think about it, in a sense, right? They only ever really use so many of. I mean, they play enough games that they can get enough use out of so many, but they primarily only use a couple of them. But the great thing of it is the revenue that it brings in, right? Like. At this point, goddamn, the Miami Heat have a new jersey design every year that is primarily based on sales. And the last two or three that they came out with, I've literally sat here and I'm like, shit, I kind of want one. I'm looking at some of them now for the Miami Heat. I want people to go do this at home. Like, go look up soccer jerseys and then go look up NBA jerseys, very specifically like Miami Heat jerseys. And then, like, after you fight with yourself about not buying one, go look at hockey jerseys. They're trash. They're garbage compared to soccer and NBA jerseys.
There will be no slander of the neon green Dallas Stars or the Seattle Kraken on this podcast.
Don't you even try to defend this.
So, like, we got to remove the Seattle Kraken from the discussion because they hit that out of the park.
And the neon green Dallas Stars jersey are awesome.
I am looking at that right now. That is hot garbage, man.
Sir.
This is hot street garbage. We can make a poll on Twitter for this one, man.
Sports Odds Ends. We'll do it.
The thing about the... specifically the Vice Edition jerseys, like, they should have just stuck with the original Vice Edition jerseys, but then they had to change it because they have to issue a new City Edition jersey every year in the NBA, which is, like, that's the thing that bugs me is, like,
yeah.
It's okay if you have 7 different designs, but, like, at least, like, you don't have to rotate all of them all the time. Like, you don't need a new City Edition every year.
Let them permeate a little bit. Give them breathe.
You know, like, the Kings one, like, they had a really nice one a couple of years ago, and then they had to figure out what to do for the next year, and they decided, oh, I don't know, let's just make it red. And the Kings have never had red jerseys before, and that just made it weird. And then this year, they just flat out, like... You know, our friend Petey Rave, like, literally hit me up and was like, what the fuck is this? Because it looked like the Kings just flat out copied the Miami Vice colors. And so it's like, you don't have to change this up every year. Like, you know, just to do money grabs. But yeah, like, you know, just to drag this back to the NHL. I don't know. I feel like most of the NHL jerseys out there actually look okay. Like, I feel like they're not overly tacky with colors, but I also feel like they've for the most part, it seems like teams are limited to three jerseys, and maybe they have a bunch of different alternate logos, which I think is a pretty cool thing. But when it comes to color schemes, I don't think any of the teams out there have like really egregiously bad looking ones. I don't know. I will give the NHL a pass on that. And I think they have a little bit room to be a little bit more creative, especially if it's going to give them a little bit more revenue. Because the NHL, even though we do think of it as like the fourth largest sport in North America, I don't know. It's, we could always do with more, seeing more hockey on TV and just in more prevalent places. I would like to see it kind of move up the ladder a little bit, because as I always say, like, I've never tuned into a hockey game and regretted it, and or attended a hockey game and regretted it. And it's a shame that this is the sport that's struggling the most out of all the big ones, because it's kind of the most exciting one to me. Hopefully the NHL can withstand this period of not having fans in the stands, because as you said, Kaz, like that's kind of the most important part of the NHL experience, the most positive part of the experience. So I don't know that, I'm surprised that this number is as low as 15 million for the entire league. I would expect that to be a little bit higher, but at least like 1 million per team. It is what it is now. Everybody's struggling, and I think we've talked that to death. Thank you all for listening to the show. Where it's been a long year when it comes to sports. We'll release the 2020 prediction, or a recap of our 2020 predictions and our 2021 predictions for next year pretty soon. So it'll be kind of a nice way to recap the year in sports, what has been a very unexpected and exciting, in some ways exciting, some ways frustrating year in sports. I think we've exposed a lot of good and exposed a lot of bad, and kind of had a chance to reassess what we do like and hate about sports. So thank you all for hanging with us throughout the year and throughout the lack of sports. And if you want to check out more of our show, head on over to sportsoddsandends.com. Links to all of our past episodes there, links to where you can subscribe to us on iTunes and wherever else you can find podcasts. patreon.com/sportsoddsandends if you want to support this show financially. Thank you to all of you out there who continue to do so. Hit us up on Twitter if you want to chat sports. I'm at JVZ. Kaz is at King Kaz. DGM is at Call Me DGM. The show account is at Sports Odds Ends. So follow all that to see when these episodes go live, or are available for download. If you want to hit us up live, you can twitch.tv/JVZ. We usually record around 2 p.m. Eastern on Sundays. So thank you all for hanging in with us in the year 2020. We'll see you next time.